Update. Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.
Fueled by Frank and Honest Gourmet Coffee. The perfect blend to kickstart your day. Barista quality coffee available at Centra and Supervalue.
It is time, people.
Warning.
The following item is not recommended for little ears.
Because it's time for a dose of sex therapy with Rachel Cook.
Yes, and today, people, we are going to be talking about Mr. or Miss Right or non-gender specific right person, persons. Rachel will know. Kylie Minogue has recently admitted that she has found her Mr. Right. Her quote, we wanted to find out if there is such a thing as this perfect person in your life. And joining me on the line now is our resident sex and relationship therapist, Rachel Cook. How are you?
I'm brilliant, Jen. How about you?
I'm not too bad. Is there a term, because we said Mr. or Ms. Right, is there a non-gender specific term for that?
Oh, there sure is. It's usually pronounced mux, so it's basically just M and then an X. And that's the gender neutral title that more and more of us are using and is more and more accepted, which is great.
I knew you'd know. No, I knew you'd know. So let's get straight to it. Is there such a thing as the perfect person for you?
Oh, look, there's right for you. There's right at that time. But basically, no, of course there isn't one person for anyone. Of course there isn't anyone who's going to be, you know, consistently perfect for you over time. But it's still a kind of a trope and a myth that has sustained throughout the years. And I think it's just really damaging. You know, we're looking at people like Kylie Minogue or Jennifer Aniston, you know, that they're seen as these sort of like tragic old maids, sort of withered crones, heartbroken, devastated, pathetic, destined to remain unmarried. You know, I was reading that, who was it? It was Jennifer Aniston who was described multiple times over the years. She's been described as the world's saddest single woman.
Oh, God. That is so
it's just
awful.
You know, I think this is, you know, kind of go, it's a little bit of an aside from the idea of having like a Mr. or a Miss Right or a mix. But it's, you know, I think this is just something that is really important for us to look at and how it is talked about in the media and how we shame and pick apart people's relationships, especially people who've been brought up as women. But this is, you know, it's just terrifying.
Why are women always defined by their relationship status?
I think that there's lots of reasons for that, but I do think that it is a cultural sexism, you might call it misogyny, this idea that, you know, basically women's worth is absolutely determined by marriage and children far more than men. So there's still this kind of compulsory monogamy and heterosexuality as well. You know, that we're sort of talking about how it's completely fine to have different kinds of relationships, to have different kinds of, you know, sexualities and genders. But the predominant mainstream messages are still telling us that unless you get married and have children in a heterosexual relationship as a woman and a man, that you are a weirdo and a failure.
Let's talk about some other harmful myths about relationships and finding a great partner.
Yeah. So there's loads of them. OK, so the main one is that there's the one, you know, this sort of romantic mirage about the idea that there's one person. Then you have ones like that you'll just know when you meet them, you'll know right away, which is absolutely, you know, that's just, you know, it's just not the case. That they have to be your best friend. You know, of course you want to have love and respect and care with your partner, but they absolutely do not need to be your best friend. The idea that you have to be immediately wildly attracted to them, absolutely not. You know, for many people that will grow over time. That you'll be inseparable, really unhealthy, really damaging. There's no way that you should be spending all of your time with one person or thinking all about one person. Doubt means don't, or that you have to feel 100% sure. Again, you know, there's just no reasonable way that you're going to feel 100% sure about
all the time.
No, absolutely not. There might be times when you feel absolutely head over heels and can't imagine someone better for you. And there'll be other times where you hate their guts and don't know, you know, why you're in this at all. What else have you got? OK, that they'll meet your every need or that they complete you. That's a really, really damaging one. You know, the current paradigm of romantic love has this huge pressure expecting couples to be each other's best friend, lover, parent, career advisor, therapist, travel companion, social secretary. It's like it's just completely unrealistic that one person is going to meet all of these needs. That you should feel like you've been swept off your feet or feel like it's a fairy tale. Like, that goes to me, hello, love bombing. You're looking at potentially quite a narcissistic dynamic there, if that's the case. I hear you laughing there, Jen.
Yeah, you're making a lot of people feel much better about their relationships, because this narrative is going on and on. It's in our storybooks. It's in every movie we watch. And it's damaging. So with all that in mind, Rachel, what should we be looking for if we want a lifelong partner? What traits should we be considering instead?
Absolutely. Well, let's start with, why are you looking for a lifelong partner?
Okay.
You know, I do think that.
Good question.
It's absolutely feasible, but it's probably not as feasible nor desirable for many of us now that people of all genders can take care of themselves financially and professionally, or certainly it's becoming more equal or equitable. But many people still want to aim for having a lifelong relationship, and there's nothing wrong with that either. And so, you know, especially, I suppose, if you decide to have children, it makes sense to be together longer term where possible. But, you know, basically, it's good to continually reflect on, figure out and communicate your needs to each other, and also just what's going on for you as to why you want a lifelong partnership. But if you do want that, and even if you don't, but you just want to have healthy, fulfilling partnerships with people, some of the sort of things to look for are like how you both want to spend your time and energy, both separately and together. You know, that I think is a really important one. You can be head over heels for someone. You can have this amazing cocktail of hormones that have you feeling obsessed with the other person. But if you don't have compatible, it doesn't necessarily have to be the same, but compatible ways of spending your time and energy when you're together and when you're apart, then you're just going to really struggle. Similar values, especially around, you know, sort of like what family means and, you know, what life or happiness mean to you. Again, doesn't have to be the same, but you're probably going to want compatible values there. Your attachment styles, which I think I'm going to talk about next week as well. So the ways that you are in love, like, do you tend to be more avoidant? Do you tend to be more anxious? Do you tend to feel pretty secure in your partnerships? Then one you'll have heard of, Jen's love languages. I think we've actually talked about that before. Just knowing, like, how do you both like to receive love? And knowing that about each other, you can then be, you know, more just more specific about how you show love to the other person, because often what we will do is we will give love in the way that we want to receive it. But if that's not our partner's love language, then often both people can end up feeling, you know, resentful and disconnected and, you know, just not very cared for. So that's a really good one to easily Google and research, is your love languages. And another one is your conflict style. I find that extremely important. It's all well and good when you're getting on well and you're having a great time together. But if one of you tends to massively withdraw and shut down, or one of you tends to really want to, you know, argue heatedly, you're just going to have huge, huge problems and feel immensely betrayed and hurt and you know, upset about what happens between you. So that's a really good thing to talk about and look at, is your conflict styles. And I think another one is to really ask important questions in the first few dates. You know, do you want children? What country do you want to live in? Do you have any major plans that might change your relationship? Do you want to even cohabit? These are sorts of things that are really great to look at in terms of compatibility, compared to the things that we often do, such as the externals of like job, money, looks, even class, which these sorts of things really don't tell us much about compatibility.
Do you think, right, or yes, these myths and these dangerous narratives that we've been told since we were small, do you think they have actually ruined a good relationship on a
Definitely.
Lot of people? Yeah.
Loads. You know, there's so much fear, like the fear of getting left behind, of being left on the shelf, this societal conditioning, like a real cultural narrative of what a successful life looks like, and that it still largely means partnering up, cohabiting, getting married and having children. And that's a very strong pull for many people. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with wanting that. It's just that for most of us, it feels absolutely compulsory. And so then you have this, you know, a lot of shame around that, a lot of fear, a lot of people not speaking up about their needs or being afraid of upsetting their partners, and then just slowly drifting away from each other or sort of acting out from the fear of, you know, what they'll be thought of either by their partner or by their family or by society. So it ruins relationships all the time.
So with that in mind, what kind of questions should we be asking ourselves to have healthier, more compatible relationships?
Oh, so many. How you could ask yourself things like, have your past partners turned out to be who they thought they would? If so, you know, why was that? Or if not, why do you think that was? Are you most often attracted to partners who are out of reach? You know, for many of us, we'll have experienced a kind of a emotional deprivation growing up. We might have had, you know, it could have been a parent, mother, or parents who were emotionally distant, or we might have had one parent who was quite engulfing and intrusive, or who we felt like we had to take care of because they were anxious or depressed themselves. You know, so it can be very good to sort of question, what do we see as a pattern for ourselves? In, do we tend to choose people who are really into us, but we're not very into them? Things like that. So, you know, or are there qualities that you look initially for in a partner, ones that actually make sense for the longer term? You know, often we'll find that we can be super attracted to someone in the beginning because they are, you know, super smart, witty, they're charming, you know, but those sorts of things, absolutely, it's okay to want those qualities in a partner, but they don't tell you anything about what that's going to be like for you longer term. So that's some good things. Also things like, what sort of things are deal breakers to you and why? You know, because that's going to differ from person to person. And most people I talk to, when couples come to me, or even just people individually who are working on themselves and their relationships, they haven't a clue about this stuff because we haven't been educated on how to ask ourselves these questions. So we're kind of just going in, you know, pretty sightless.
So if we're going out there and we're not looking for Mr. Right, what should we be looking for?
We should be looking for a person who we can build something with, who we can laugh with, you know, that we can share memorable moments, that we can grow with, who we can feel good with and feel safe with. And that is absolutely okay to have in mind what it is that you would like longer term, but that, you know, ultimately you're looking for someone who you feel safe and good with, who you can be honest with, and who you respect and they respect you, and that basically you have space to be yourself, to explore things, to grow, and, you know, to care about each other and make some nice memories.
Oh, that takes the pressure off, Rachel, to be honest with you. Oh,
I hope it does. You know, it's just so much less sense of becoming a, you know, withered crone who's been left on the shelf with being an ultimate failure.
Yeah, I think the two big things I got from you today was, first of all, asking yourself why. I mean, do you really want a long-term partner? And the second thing, which is very important, because you hear it all the time, oh, they're my best friend and my lover and they're great, they're everything to me. It's impossible for them to be everything all the time, and to give them a break and yourself a break in thinking like that, right?
Oh, massively. And that's another thing about, you know, sort of coupledom at the moment, and the couple privilege, and how we see, you know, people who are partnered as being sort of basically more successful than those people who are single. And that can be very, you know, that's very addictive, because obviously what you feel a sense of safety and security within that, which makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
It's just that can also then mean the people who are in relationships that are actually massively unfulfilling, possibly even, you know, unhealthy or abusive, are staying in them because of the fear of being, of, you know, feeling lonely, of being judged by other people as a failure. So, you know, it's just really important to look at what you value, what you want in your life, and also having a network, really, really important, having a network of people that can be friends, it can be family, it can be communities that you're involved in, but that there's absolutely no way that one person is going to meet all your needs.
No.
And if you are expecting them to fulfill all those roles for you, what is going to happen is that, you know, every little thing that isn't working exactly as you want is going to be blown, you know, disproportionately painfully, because you don't have anyone else to be able to meet those needs with. So that is where, you know, the squad, the friendship group, is ultimately easily as important as a romantic partner. And for many people is actually more important, because friends are often very likely to last a lot longer than our romantic partnerships. So, you know, the sooner we can put at least as much value in our friendships as our romantic relationships, the better.
So it is about finding the one, but the one being yourself, finding, falling in love with yourself. That is the only true one for anybody, right? For a happy and content life.
Yeah. Well, you're the only one at the end of the day who actually have control over and have, you know, full responsibility for. So although it can feel like a bit of a cliche and, you know, a kind of a, you know, possibly even a bit sort of fluffy or wishy-washy, the idea of loving yourself, you know, at the end of the day, you only have yourself. You can only fully guarantee you and yourself and your behavior. So, you know, the quicker that you are delighted with yourself, the better.
You didn't talk about lube once, Rachel. Fair play to you.
Not once. I kept it in somehow. Wait till next week.
Well, listen, Rachel Cook, a psychotherapist and mental health consultant, thank you so much for that. We'll talk to you next week. And you can follow Rachel on Instagram. She is amazing. Well worth the follow at Rachel Jane Cook with the knee on the end of it. And she'll be back next week. And if you have any questions that you would like us to put to her, you can get in touch with the team 24/7. Just mail me, jen@rte.ie.
Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.